Did you know that your medical school application GPA will likely not be the same as your transcript GPA? There are lots of reasons for that, and it can be frustrating, but there is a free, easy way to calculate your medical school application GPA at mapped.com. That's MAPPD.com. Using Mapped app, which is now free to use for a GPA calculator, this is a new change. So if you've checked out Mapped before, if it's been a while, go check it out. We've come a long way with Mapped app. And now with our free tier, after your 30-day free trial, using the referral code 30 days free, that's all one word, all capital letters, 30, the number 30 days free. After that free trial of using all of the amazing features inside of Mapped, you can now continue to use Mapped for free. Again, that's mapped.com, MAPPD.com. Specialty Story, session number 180. Whether you are a pre-med or a medical student, you've answered the calling to become a physician. Soon you'll have to start deciding what type of medicine you'll want to practice. This podcast will tell you the stories of specialists from every field to give you the information to make sure you make the most informed decision possible when it comes to choosing your specialty. Welcome to Specialty Stories. My name is Dr. Ryan Gray, your host here every week, where I get to have amazing conversations with physicians from every specialty. Before we jump into today's specialty, if you are a pre-med student, go check out medschoolapplicationbook.com. Again, that's medschoolapplicationbook.com. That's my fourth book, The Pre-Med Playbook Guide to the Medical School Application Process, and it is now available for pre-order. It's due out May 25th, which if you're applying this cycle is late, but I'm working hard with my publisher to try to get it out as soon as possible. And there's some options that I'll be having, and I'll send some more updates soon, where if you pre-order it, you can submit your receipt and we'll get you a PDF copy of it so you can start honing your application and not make mistakes like we see on Application Renovation, which is my YouTube series, if you haven't seen that, where I review students who did not get into medical school. So again, medschoolapplicationbook.com to go check out my new book coming out soon. This week, we have a great guest, an amazing pathology subspecialty that you'll hear is not one that can typically sustain you for a full-time gig, but an interesting subspecialty nonetheless. We're going to talk to Dr. Jose Mantilla, a sarcoma and soft tissue pathologist. We start the conversation by talking about how Dr. Mantilla first became interested in pathology and sarcoma and soft tissue pathology specifically.
So when I went to medical school, I thought I was going to be a psychiatrist, which didn't last too long. Lasted for about one semester. I really liked, we had a proper histology course. We had three semesters of normal histology in medical school. And I fell in love with it and realized that I wanted, that was actually what I wanted to do for my life. So I made up my mind really, really early in medical school. Helps that I'm probably a very visually oriented person. So that was a big part of why I decided to do that. So yeah, I made my mind in my first year of medical school, and I planned all my rotations and my things with that goal in mind. So in Colombia, in our sixth year of medical school, you do essentially a real internship. You rotate in everything as if you were doing a transitional year. And the second half, we used to get a good amount of elective time. We essentially got 6 months of elective time. And I did 3 months in pathology, 3 months in clinical genetics. And I had a mentor back then in our pathology department who was really into bone pathology. He also did a bit of everything. And he was probably the one who convinced me the most about it. When I started residency, I thought I wanted to do either bone and soft tissue or hematopathology. I think they do share a fair bit of things in common. And I made my mind also really early for a second year of residency. I did still like hematopathology. I think I like the fact that bone and soft tissue is a very niche of specialty. It's pretty much the kind of pathology that all pathologists tend to be afraid of. Mm. You see the most interesting things, and you see a very wide variety of entities. So I made my mind early in residency. And so I, after residency, I did a fellowship in general surgical pathology, and the year after, a year of bone and soft tissue pathology.
You're like, give me more fellowship training. I'm not ready to be a real doctor yet.
To be go practice in real life. It does help. As I was telling you, it's hard to practice bone and soft tissue pathology alone, even in a large academic center. I still do head and neck and thoracic pathology. Mm.
So
a good amount of overlap.
Yeah. So talk about that for a minute. So bone and soft tissue pathology, why isn't there enough demand to have that as your full-time career?
It's disease epidemiology. If you think about it, sarcomas are 1% or less of human cancers. And the amount of benign lesions is not that common either. So if you're practicing bone and soft tissue pathology, you have to practice in a large academic center that has the orthopedic oncologists and the multidisciplinary teams to practice it. But there are many places where you can do it. And when you do it, unless you have a gigantic consult service, you'll want to do something else.
Yeah. So it's almost a good thing that you can't make it a full-time career, because sarcomas aren't the best cancers to have.
No, they're not good news.
Yeah. Okay. Very interesting. So talk about what is sarcoma and soft tissue cancer? What does that look like for you as a pathologist? What sorts of diseases are those?
So there are very diverse diseases, and most of them are rare. If we think of all sarcomas being about 1% of human cancers, and you have hundreds of different types of sarcomas, they all look very different. They all behave very different. You have sarcomas that are very indolent, and that you can just excise and won't metastasize, will behave well. And you have sarcomas that are essentially dead sentences that respond very poorly to therapy. You think about like new emerging round cell sarcomas are probably just have dismal prognosis. Versus you think of lower grade sarcomas or benign things that may resemble sarcomas. So it makes a big difference how to classify them. There is some overlap, but we have a lot of tools. Mm. We have a lot of immunohistochemical tools. We have a lot of molecular tools. We do a lot of amateur radiology. So it's challenging. We see a lot of really uncommon, really interesting things. And I feel what we do makes a big difference in how patients get treated and how they're going to do in the longer term.
Yeah. What do you think are some good skills or traits that lead to someone being a good sarcoma and soft tissue cancer, or maybe just a general pathologist?
For both, I think you have to pay a lot of attention to detail. Be someone detail-oriented, be, of course, visually oriented, as long as in any area of anatomic pathology, you have to read a lot. I've never stopped reading, staying up to date, especially in the realm of sarcomas. We come up with new classifications. We have all these new genetic tools. We describe new sarcoma types all the time for findings that make sarcomas behave more or less aggressively or respond more or better or worse to some kinds of treatment. So you always have to stay up to date. What else? I think we are at our institution, we're about four bone and soft tissue pathologists, and we work really closely. We show each other cases all the time. We try to do consensus conferences nearly every day. So it definitely helps to have a good team to work with and get along with them.
Yeah. What are some of the biggest misconceptions around sarcoma and soft tissue pathology?
That all sarcomas are terrible. I think that's a major misconception. Of course, any kind of cancer is bad news.
Yeah.
But what we do makes a huge difference. I can find things that respond a lot better to treatment. There's targeted therapies. There are sarcomas that are very indolent. If you think about low-grade pyramidal sarcoma, for example, that don't require much systemic therapy. There's a huge relevance of what we do. People often think, well, sarcoma is bad news no matter what. That's not necessarily true. I think a general misconception about pathology altogether is that we receive something and we're some kind of magical black box that gets a final diagnosis, which could not be farther from truth.
Yeah.
There's a lot of subjectivity in what we do. And it's as much an art as it is science.
Yeah. There always seems to be a lot of frustration from the physicians sending specimens to pathology, expecting that you're this magical black box. And then they get back basic information saying, like, we need more information. And so to kind of garbage in, garbage out is a very common saying in a lot of fields, but it's the same thing. Yep. If you send me a sample and you don't tell me what it is or what it's from or what your thoughts are, I'm not going to be able to tell you what it is.
You took the words out of my mouth. We cannot work in a vacuum.
Yeah.
For instance, every time we sign out bone tumors, we look at imaging. And we were closely. Another interesting thing, as you were mentioning, sometimes the bigger the mass, the smaller the biopsy.
Yeah.
And people don't seem to understand that.
Yeah. Okay. So for all you future primary care doctors listening to this, and even subspecialists, treat your pathologist nicely and give them as much information as possible.
And as much tissue. There's no such thing as too much tissue.
Yeah. For the sarcoma and soft tissue pathology world, how much patient interaction is involved? And I know some pathology fields, there's a little bit more, but do you have a lot in that specific subspecialty?
Very little. Sometimes patients do call my office to ask questions about their diagnosis. So of course, there's a lot of uncertainty, especially we get consults from a very broad area. Mm. Some patients in more rural areas who don't necessarily have access to a sarcoma team. So every very seldom I talk to patients who have questions about their diagnosis. Most of our interactions are with other physicians.
Yeah. Talk about the training path to be a sarcoma soft tissue pathologist. Obviously, 4 years of medical school. Then what does the training path look like for postgraduate training?
Do 4 years of, well, either 3 years of residency if you do anatomic pathology only, or four if you do anatomic pathology and clinical pathology combined. Then afterwards, bone and soft tissue pathology fellowships are 1 year. So a minimum would be 4 years of training. I did APCP and two fellowships. So, and then, yeah, it would range from 4 to 6 years. Mm.
What does a typical day look like for you?
I have a very flexible schedule. I usually walk in later in the morning, and when I'm on service, I go over cases with residents. Usually I look at the biopsies first, the in-house biopsies, work them up, order immunohistochemical stains. Then look at the large resections. With another resident, we usually have the residents get split between biopsies and large resections. And that takes most of my morning and early afternoon, after which I review consult cases with the fellows. Our institution, the fellows' responsibilities usually take care of guiding the residents and reviewing slide reviews and calls, consults from the outside. So we go over that. Some days I'm on frozen sections, which is either from 8 to 12:30 or 12:30 to 5. So I do that at the same time as we're trying to sign out cases, which breaks out the day a little bit.
Yeah.
I do tumor boards. I cover several. We have two sarcoma tumor boards a week. Usually do a sarcoma tumor board for the extremities on Tuesdays and one for visceral sarcomas on Wednesdays. And I also cover thoracic and head and neck tumor boards. So those usually take an hour here and there.
Can you explain what tumor board is for a student hearing that or maybe has heard that before, and they're like, "What is this tumor board thing?"
So tumor boards are a really fun part of the job. So we have a meeting with surgeons, radiologists, radiation oncology, medical oncology, and discuss complex cases between all specialties. Try to set up a plan for treatment or additional study. So it's a very close multidisciplinary work.
Yeah. Why is that so different than every other field? Because you don't hear of like endocrinology rounds or boards, right? Of like, oh, let's talk about diabetes boards. Like, why is tumor boards, why is that so special in the oncology world?
I think as cancer is becoming more and more, cancer care is becoming more complex, we have better treatment options. We have genetic findings that can guide treatment. So it's becoming more individualized. And every patient's cancer can be treated differently or studied differently. And so it makes sense to meet as a team and discuss these cases to try to give the patients the best care they can.
Mm. Yeah, makes sense. What's the competitiveness of matching into something like sarcoma and soft tissue pathology fellowship?
It's really a buyer's market.
Yeah.
There are very few fellowship training programs. I think they're in the single digits in the United States. It's also the field that pathologists are afraid of most of the time. So it really is a buyer's market, and we all know each other. It's a very small world. So I think everyone who's interested ends up in a good fellowship.
Yeah.
There's not a proper match. It's a more informal process. So it's very, generally very low key.
Okay. That's good. What does call look like for you?
Call is seldom. I take call, I would say about night call, about every week or every other week. It's all from home. So it's all about rush biopsies or frozen sections. Mm.
What would be a good example of a patient or a disease pathology that would require that sort of urgency?
A lot of the time, staging, well, most of the of the frozen sections we receive are margins. Patients who are getting oncologic resections of complicated tumors, and surgeon needs to make sure the tumor is completely excised. So we get representative sections of the margins they're concerned about, and we can give an estimate, or we can give a rapid evaluation of whether the margin's involved or not. Mm. That's probably the most common type of frozen section we have. Rush biopsies are usually more commonly transplant biopsies. When we cover call, we cover general surgical pathology call, so we do everything. I would say the most common is transplant rejections.
Do you feel like you have enough time for life outside of the hospital?
Yeah, for sure. Most of the weekends I'm free. I am not a morning person. I tend to shift my towards the evening. So I get home late, and my wife may complain a bit about that. But I have a lot of flexibility.
With COVID-19, I've talked to a few pathologists who have potentially seen this shift of like, we've had this technology to scan slides forever, but we never used it. We would still come into the hospital all the time. Do you see a potential shift away from pathologists going into a hospital and using technology to be able to read slides at home?
That's a very good question. We use a slide scanner. We have the technology, and we can slide and scan slides and look at them from home. I do that sometimes when I'm on call. If there's a resident still on site, they can scan them, and I can look at them remotely. It's not the same. I think it's going to take more and more place. It still doesn't feel like having the glass slide in your hands, but it's for sure convenient. And I know. I actually look at. I've done some telepathology. I volunteer for this. ASCP, the American Society of Clinical Pathology, has this program where we review cases from Africa. So I look at slides from Uganda sometimes as consults of challenging sarcoma cases, which is fascinating. You can see, something across the planet straight from your computer. So it's great.
Yeah. That's interesting. It probably
feel the same.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel the same as like last slide, but you can definitely make a diagnosis.
Yeah. It'll be interesting. Just kind of the normal kind of evolution of technology, where the younger generation of physicians, of pathologists coming up, will be more accustomed to not holding and manipulating glass slides. they'll consider you as the old fogey who wants to still hold the glass slide. And they're like, why do you need that? You don't need that.
I think that might happen. You still get some three-dimensionality on the glass slide that you don't get on the computer. That's probably what I feel the most.
Not yet, at least.
Not yet.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. What is there in terms of negative bias towards osteopathic residents or fellows? Is there anything that osteopathic students need to do to overcome any negative bias?
Not at all. Our matching class here right now has, I think, something like 3 out of 5 incoming first years are DOs.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And yeah, we had a lot of co-residents who were DOs, so I don't think there's a bias at all in our specialty.
Yeah. I always joke. I'm like, how do you do OMT on pathology slides? But that's all right. That's good to know. That's really good to know. You talked already about the kind of the fact that pathology doesn't operate in a black box and in a vacuum, and the referring or consulting physicians really need to provide as much information as possible. Is there anything else that you want the future primary care docs and specialists that are listening to this, anything else you want them to know about your job?
Yeah, I think there's something that's also really important and can prevent frustrations on both sides. It's to understand that tissue doesn't make it straight from the patient into a glass slide in seconds, and it takes processing. So processing usually entails the tissue goes into formalin to fix, proteins become cross-linked, the tissue essentially doesn't rot, then it gets dehydrated, and the water gets replaced by paraffin through a series of processes. And from that paraffin, the tissue is cut, the paraffin is removed, then stained, dehydrated, stained, and cleared so light can go through it. That whole process is complex and takes about 8 hours on average. You can speed it up, but it does affect quality. So it's not productive when you have just taken a biopsy and co-pathology half an hour later asking for results. It takes time to process tissue. It takes time. If something's easy, yeah, we can look at it and make a diagnosis in seconds. But sometimes cases are difficult, and we need to think about them. We need to order additional stains. We need to show them around to our colleagues. So I would say that sometimes you have to compromise fast or accurate, and I would always pick accurate.
Yeah. There's a saying in the kind of entrepreneurial world. I forget the exact saying, but there are like three things: quality, speed, and cost. And you can only have two of three. You can't have something fast and of high quality that's cheap, right? It's gonna cost you a lot. And
that's impossible.
Yeah, but you can have something fast and cheap, but it's not going to be very quality. And so it's kind of the same in the pathology world. You want it fast, it's not going to be very good.
It is exactly the same.
Yeah.
And it does get frustrating when you start getting phone calls half an hour, like, let us do our job. We're trying to give you an answer quick.
Yeah,
you want the right answer.
Yeah, and that's where I think we were talking about EHRs before we hit record, and I think there's an opportunity there for when the physician puts that order in for the EHR to say, "Hey, doc, this is going to take 8 hours. Don't bother your pathologist."
That's a good idea.
Of course, it's a good idea. This is the kind of stuff I think about. Oh man, unfortunately, I thought a long time ago. It was funny during my internship. I started planning an EHR. I'm like, I'm going to make an EHR in the future. And then that kind of went off the rails.
Deal with that.
Yeah. Anyway, so obviously as a pathologist, you're working with a ton of different subspecialties. For the sarcoma and soft tissue subspecialty, what specialties are you working the closest with?
Orthopedic oncology, of course. Oncologic surgery for the abdominal surgery, surgical cases. Medical oncology, we're really close. Radiation and radiology. Essentially, all of us work together.
Yeah.
Work a fair bit with ENT as well.
Okay. Interesting. Is there anything you know now that you wish you knew before going into sarcoma and soft tissue pathology?
When I was a medical student, I also thought that we were a black box and we had absolute objectivity. And I should have known better back then, but I have no regrets about it. It's part of knowing it better. I think it's very important, and I would say I would emphasize that it's important to know every other specialty of medicine too, if you're going to pathology, especially if you're doing a subspecialty that deals with rare diseases. You need to know some radiology, you need to know some surgery, some internal medicine, you need to know a bit of everything. So don't blow off all the other specialties, because there's a lot to learn from them.
That's very important for every specialty. I think too many students, once they hone in on the specialty that they want to do, like you did very early on, it's like, well, I don't need to know this. I don't need to know that. That's not part of pathology. And then you realize, oh, shoot, like I should have paid attention.
You need to learn all those things.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay. What do you like the most about being a sarcoma and soft tissue pathologist?
I see really interesting diseases. I really like that. We work with a really nice group. We have a really good collegial environment. I think it's very satisfying to make some diagnosis. Especially, it's really fun to diagnose something that's benign, that's appearing aggressively clinically, but you can reassure the patient that their disease is benign. It's not a high-grade sarcoma. That's very satisfying. Being able to tell someone, your lesion's benign. We see really interesting things. I really enjoy teaching as well, and I enjoy doing clinical research. I really like my job altogether.
That's good. What do you like the least?
Administrative issues. administrative burden's never fun, but I think that goes with every single specialty.
Yeah. In the pathology world, is there a lot of fighting with insurance companies or no?
Probably a lot less so than other specialties. I often fight with insurance companies with molecular testing. We have a really interesting platform that's based on RT-PCR, and we use it to detect fusion genes. A lot of sarcomas, about a third of sarcoma entities, have some fusion genes that help us diagnose them and drive their behavior. And we have this platform runs something like 100 genes for RT-PCR. And gives you an exact fusion gene regardless of the partner, so you can detect a lot of new fusions on top of the ones you know. And getting insurance to approve that test is a nightmare every single time.
Yeah.
Even though it's necessary, and NCCN guidelines tell you like use molecular to classify things accurately, but as soon as you tell an insurance company something is multiple genes, they essentially instantly deny it.
Yeah. From the standpoint of technology or major changes coming to the specialty that students coming up through training should be aware of, one thing I love to talk about in pathology is machine learning and AI. The big guns like Google and other startups are out there trying to create algorithms for reading slides as an adjunct with pathologists. Do you see that making a big impact in the next 5 or 10 years? Where do you see that technology going?
I think it will make an impact. I think the impact might be more positive than anything. It might take a lot of the tedious parts of our job away, like scanning lymph nodes. It might make our job easier. The same was said about molecular. People thought that you could sequence every single tumor and it would give you a diagnosis, which turned out not to be true, but it's a really useful tool. I think the same thing is going to happen with machine learning. we'll be able to have computer tell us things that are might make our life easier. I imagine looking at, say, mediastinal lymph nodes or lymph nodes in head and neck, and you're looking at 100 lymph nodes by yourself when you can scan them and have the computer find small metastases.
Yeah.
That'd be nice.
Yeah, that's interesting. I was literally just listening to a podcast episode. There's a startup in the Bay Area using MRI technology to do full body scans in an hour, doing a full body scan in an hour to detect stage one cancers. And they're hoping to get the cost down to $500 a scan, which would be phenomenal to go every couple of years and get a full body scan in an hour. It'd be amazing if you could get there.
That would make a huge difference.
Yeah. So I love technology. I'm a huge tech nerd. If you had to do it all over again, would you still be a soft tissue and sarcoma pathologist?
I would, definitely. Oh.
Any last words of wisdom for the student thinking about pathology or looking at different subspecialties in pathology?
I think if you're interested in going into pathology, it's good to, more than anything, learn what we do, how our specialty works. Unfortunately, medical school curricula have been getting shorter and shorter on histology and anatomy. And those are very important.
It's crazy, isn't it?
It's terrifying.
I don't understand it. It's like, hey, one of our biggest selling points is we get you in the clinical setting in 18 months instead of 24. I'm like, how are students learning everything that we know when we know more and more every day? I don't understand.
It's scary. I had 3 semesters of gross anatomy and 3 semester course of histology. And now it's like first, like everything condensed in the year.
Yeah, unfortunately. And I don't know if it was like that in Columbia. I'm doubting, but everything here, it's all taught to the test. If you don't need to know it for step one or step two, then you'll learn it eventually at some point.
Yeah, in Columbia, the medical school in Columbia is really different. For one, we had a 6-year program. Yeah. And the other thing is you're expected to graduate and practice as a primary care physician.
Yeah.
With or without a residency. So it's a lot more hands-on. And we definitely got a lot of more preclinical science.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I would say, yeah, learn anatomy and histology. Know what pathologists do, I think. With even less basic preclinical science curriculum, medical students get exposed less and less to pathology, which makes it difficult for us. So it's always nice to get a rotation. If you're interested and you rotate in pathology, it will definitely make you competitive. And we're a very small world, so we tend to know each other all over the academic pathology world.
So reach out.
Reach out, for sure.
All right, so there you have it. Again, Dr. Jose Mantilla, a sarcoma and soft tissue pathologist. Hope you learned something today. If you want some more information about sarcoma and soft tissue pathology, go to isbstp.org. That's the International Society of Bone and Soft Tissue Pathology. Again, that's isbstp.org. Have a great week, and don't forget to check out medschoolapplicationbook.com.
This is MedEd Media.